Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity, part of the Podmatch podcast network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And one of my favorite things to do with this show is to introduce so many different creative elements to my listeners. So while I love having authors on here, I also love having filmmakers. I love having screenwriters. I love having artists. I love having voiceover actors. I love having stand-up comics. I love all these different people. And I especially love having musicians on here because what they can bring to the table is something that would be incredibly useful and inspiring for so many other people that share their creative outlets here. So the music that's created can inspire some authors into creating some wonderful work. And they can even inspire filmmakers for wanting to reach out to those musicians and hopefully collaborate with them in the future. And that's definitely what we have here. My guest this week, Christopher Kaufman, he is a composer. He is an educator. He is a multimedia artist. He has created classical concert works. He's created symphonic scores for film and theater. He's even put together some very special, unique projects like the Fantastic Theater, which is spelled P-H-A-N, and which blends classical music, it blends film, dance, even puppetry. The man has done so much, and he's continuing to create as we go. And he even has a little bit of his music to share for us this week. So I really, really hope that all of you are feeling just as inspired as I am right now, just from having this conversation. So I am really excited to have him here, and I am very grateful that he reached out to be a guest on this show. I'm so happy to have him here. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Christopher Kaufman. Christopher, how are you, sir?
Very good, sir. Thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being a part of this. I am really excited. When I saw all the different things that you do, I knew that you had to be on here. So I think this is a perfect way to get things moving in this new year.
Sure. Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Now you have a very interesting project that is in the works right now. Would you care to share a little bit more about that?
Sure. I started creating stories when I was young, like around 9 years old, like adventure fantasy stories with beautiful, colorful illustrations, etc. But a few years later, I went to the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts and got into music. And then I did everything from singing bass solos in Messiah and playing oboe. Studied with the first oboe player of the New Orleans Philharmonic. I was really into that and started playing piano and composing. And then I became, as it were, a composer. And I went all the way through my doctoral degree at Cornell University years later. I studied with renowned composers and the like. So advanced music degrees and all of that. But at the same time, in my mind, every time I was like getting ready to go to sleep, I would think about my stories. So I ended up with an advanced music degree and the complete event structure for Tales of the Ocean City, which is my classical epic fantasy series. And in the early 2000s, I started trying to get it out on paper. And it was okay, but it didn't really start happening. It didn't really come to life until I developed my home laboratory with music, with Logic and the Vienna Symphonic Library and all these libraries of sounds I started creating. And so I said, let's try this. So I started recording the story, the words, the narration out loud, and then composing music to go with it. Mm-hmm. And the process really took off. And it's such that I was creating both at once. It was all happening together. It was a very exciting, fun, and passionate process, very creative. I was really into it, and it really worked. Like, I'd be writing the music, and then the words, the story, the ending would come, and I was, like, really going, it was, like, having a great time. And so I hope that communicates into the work. So
yeah,
I did the first two complete books. In the later 2000s, I'd finished them, and there's, like, 2 hours of stuff. And then I started the art process, and I created myself using various programs, graphic illustrations to go with it. So each page is like an individual work of art with background and full color and characters and all kinds of things, like almost abstract, but with classical imagery and all kinds of stuff. And so I had those done around that time. And then my daughter was born, 2010. Mm-hmm. And that was just absolutely momentous, glorious thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I started when she was around four, the Fantastic Theater, which you mentioned. And that's something I do every year. The last Sunday before Halloween, it used to have a Halloween theme and all this creative stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And I created theater pieces, which are also books and audio albums. The audio is usually first in my mind, but I conceive them all at the same time. They're live shows with action and story. And I wrote them for my daughter. And so,
oh, that's like, so cool.
The first one's called The Musical Forest. It's kind of like Peter and the Wolf on steroids. It's like the character wanders, adventures, I should say, through the musical forest, earning seed pods for music fundamentals. She has like these adventures with a teacher friend, and she earns the seed pod for rhythm or melody, harmony, families of instruments. And she takes these seed pods to the mysterious cave of Dr. Sound Artis. And plays music on his magic wall, and that's the climax of the piece. And it's all full orchestra music. It's some of my favorite music. It's like what it sounded like to be a father. It's the most joyful, simple, direct, positive music I've ever written. And it's all together with this piece that I performed with my daughter, starting when she was four, all the way through seven, and we did it with the Minnesota Symphony. A full, like you would do, Peter and the Wolf, a full orchestra in front of hundreds, 1,700 people and all this kind of thing. So, and she was like seven and a real pro, man. We did two dress rehearsals that morning and two concerts on the same day. And I could just depend on her because I was doing all this puppetry and all these puppets and keeping track of the music, doing all this. But I could she's 7 years old and I could completely lean on her because she had everything memorized. Anyway. So that was our first one of those. And then I wrote her a cinematic ballet, I call it, called Dancing Nighthawk. And it's like,
that sounds cool.
A real beautiful piece. And then The Fantastic Zoo, which is kind of our signature piece for that.
Yeah.
Where two children go to the zoo and the wizard Zathuna ushers them into the Fantastic Zoo. And I hear the stories of the phoenix, the mermaid, and the dragon. And our last production was really good. And I had a beautiful professional dancer involved. And it's a really deep piece. And so those are all available on my website, talesoftheoceancity.com, as books, audio albums, and movies. But then, to complete the story and get back to what we're talking about here is...
Yeah.
I completed all that. We hit the dystopian couple of years we had there, right?
With
the
pandemic.
And I said, okay, time to get back to it. And then I got back to Tales of the Ocean City, which was the core project of this kind of mine. And I wrote books 3, 4, and 5 in 1 year. And because the first five books are the first series of Tales of the Ocean City. Which I'll talk about in a minute as I prepare our excerpt. And then being warmed up, I continued. And the books 6, 7, and 8 are a trilogy follow-on series, all directly connected, called The Green World. But the Tales of the Ocean City, the first five, I guess I'll go into the intro for our excerpt. I'm sorry if I'm not opening it up for you to ask me things, but we'll get there.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll go ahead and introduce this thing since I'm on a roll.
Go for it.
So, Tales of the Ocean City is the story of a young civilization turning the corner into the future.
Yeah.
But before they can complete that process, they have to face an enemy from the deep past, from their deepest, most primal past, the origins of their species, in fact. And they're called the Vorm, which is a word that means form, like transforming constantly. And they you'll see they have random, they come out of these vats randomly generated and all these things. But at the beginning, it's just the two main characters, Harlute, who's a young man, and Vespucian, his lifelong companion. And she is a pariant. A pariant is a kind of telepathic Pegasus. And so they're flying over the southern plain. He's just like moving to the fully to the ocean city to join in with the city life from his island spire where he grew up. And he's moving on and to join the city. And then he sees the princess, and she's just peacefully flying, thinking about her art project. She's doing this beautiful mural on the face of the volcano. There's this, the ocean city is inset into this volcano, and there's a giant volcano. They worship the god for years and all this kind of thing called Plathanta. And way up on the high recesses, she's doing this beautiful bas-relief art project. So that's what she's thinking about.
Right.
And he wants to go over and say hello. And so he flies over, but right before he can greet her, they are attacked by enemy Vorm warriors. These horrific creatures attack them. And so the whole first book, which is called Battle in the Sky, is this 40-minute visceral, wild, fun, glorious battle between the Vorm and these four characters. So let's listen to that, if we could.
"Vespucian, aloft!" cried Harlute. With a thrust of her wings, the white Pegasus shot upwards through billowing clouds. Harlute stood with his arms held out, balancing on her back. They burst into vast heights, the realm of Kurlra, the morning sun. Whose powerful beams illumined iridescent mist on his golden skin. Far below, the ocean roared and thundered. Vespucian reached the pinnacle of her high arc. "Now," she thought to him. The Pegasus hovered, and Harlute dove backwards from her haunches. In a swan dive, he clove through tiers of frothing clouds. He used his chest and arms to glide in a spiral through the planetary wall's thick atmosphere. He reached the cool, misty air just below the clouds, jackknifed and straight, and sliced right into the churning ocean currents.
Oh, man, that is so cool. That is so cool. And the way that you've done this, it sounds so much like Heavy Metal Magazine meets Fantasia. Like that's such a really
amazing
cool,
that you said that.
A really cool way to kind of present this. Basically, like anyone who grew up with Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, they can, and now they're old enough to read Heavy Metal Magazine. Like they can actually like kind of listen to this and get lost in the storytelling that you've done through music. Like that is extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary what you've been able to do here.
It really is fun to do too. But I want to just remark, you mentioned Fantasia. And if you go to my website and you, Sound Artists is my website. That's just to read Sound Art Us, U-S. I say that because people sometimes think it's Sound Artist, but it's Sound Artus, like a Latin designation for an animal, Sound Artus. Anyway, so if you went to my news and highlights and scrolled to the bottom, it says, at 14, I went and saw Fantasia, went crazy for music, and became a composer.
There you go.
Because that really happened. We were living in New Orleans, and I saw this thing, Fantasia, and I was a kid. And I went in every day, and I saw I just sat there through every showing. The guy at the front just started waving me in. Go ahead, kid, go ahead. And
it's like, we're not even going to charge you anymore.
Like, just and it's like my whole life woke up.
Yeah.
And that was really the beginning. And that is a definite root of this project. So it's really cool that you just mentioned that.
Well, yeah, that's something that film has inspired so many different people. It's inspired people to get into animation. It's inspired them to get into music. It's inspired them to study music. And it's just like film in general, even. Just yep. That's so, it's such a rich fountain of creativity that is something that I feel like never really got its due in terms of its legacy. It just feels like it was something that Walt even said it was artistic success, financial failure. And he would even argue maybe sometimes like against artistic success just because it was a financial failure. But it's something that it's one of those wonderful things that has just endured over the years and has just gotten stronger and stronger.
It's still there. And
it's still there.
I just watched it. I'm so happy because it was the beginning of the Christmas holiday here. And I was putting on the YouTube with the Yule log thing. I was putting on it. Yep. It has the Nutcracker suite. And, I remember. I was remembering the visual images from the Fantasia bit. So I put that on. And I was so happy because my daughter's now 15 and she's into all the modern indie bands. It's beautiful stuff. I love it. But she's really a teenager. And I didn't know if this would go over, but she watched every second of it with me all the way to the end.
Great.
And loved it.
That is great.
So that's made my day.
That's awesome. And I remember 25 years ago, just a little over 25 years ago, going to see Fantasia 2000 at the IMAX in New York City, and just remembering the end of the Firebird suite at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it got so overwhelming that I just like the tears just started just like leaking out like as it was going. It
sure,
was so
like the greatest ending,
so strong,
piece,
so powerful. Oh my God, yes. And just
that
like
gets
the
to another
route.
When I was in high school, I had my summer of Stravinsky where every day was tons of it. And he's the root of my musical language.
Wow. You want to talk about an inspiration that's great to have right there. That is powerful. Like that's when you know, like when you look at someone's influences and you see that one particular composer just is at the center of it all, then you're just like,
absolutely.
Oh, okay, we're going to go for
you
a
can
ride.
Hear it. You can hear the influence. No matter how much range and different things I've done, you can hear it. Even like there was I did an indie film. I wrote the music. It's called Little Courage. And it did well with the Latin American film festivals and all this. It's about a young girl who she gathers coins and food and brings them to a homeless person. It's really touching. And at the beginning and end, there's this music. And it's just this beautiful, very poignant music. And then I realized, well, that it happens to be the beginning of the writer's spring.
Ah,
but
okay.
It just came out. I mean, you wouldn't think of that if you heard it, but there it is. It stays with you.
Oh, that's so cool. That is very cool. And I've been like a lover of classical music and film scores for really more as long as I can remember. The first piece of music that I've ever remember listening and locking into my head was the overture to Star Wars, because my father took us to see the original film, not in its original run, but the 1 year anniversary run.
Sure.
And it was a combination of that. And then maybe a couple months later, that's when Superman came out. And so those are the first two pieces of music that I remember hearing. And according to my mom and dad, the opening credits of Superman scared me because they were so... Because they were so big and loud, and everything. With the titles and everything that
well, if
were
you like
put together,
that, you will love Tchaikovsky.
Oh yeah,
because a lot of those, it's not. I don't see it as a bad thing at all. I know some composers in the conservatory. He's just stealing from Tchaikovsky. No, it's an homage. Mm-hmm. He loves it,
absolutely.
And it comes out in his music, and he's smart, and he knows that it's a language that people are already familiar with. And in a movie, you have to have that. You can't have people having to listen to the music a few times to start getting. So it's a perfect language. And it's the themes are almost, some of them identical to some things in Tchaikovsky symphonies and such. But Yeah. That's fine. But I'm just saying, if you like Williams, you'll love Tchaikovsky symphonies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just like the film scores really do provide that wonderful gateway into classical. Sure. And like you can hear the overture to Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and you hear, and you also immediately brings to mind Mars, the Bringer of War from Host. Yeah. Like it's all like right there.
And that's in everything. That's the most, probably besides a lot of Stravinsky music, which is all over the place and imitated in different ways, and Star Trek music and everything else. Mm-hmm. But the Mars, that's everywhere. Oh, that's every science fiction movie.
Oh, and so many of them have used it in trailers and everything. Like but it's great stuff. So why not
it's
use
fine.
It? You know?
It's good.
So what was your reaction when someone reached out to you first and said, like, would you be able to do music for my film project?
Oh, it was really enjoyable. They often want the music to be a character of its own in there, and you're supporting mm-hmm. it. What I really enjoyed doing was I would, for a couple of projects, I did the music and the sound design.
Oh.
So I could work them together. Nice. Like you have a car, and then the splashing of the tire is a sound.
Yeah.
And then the pitch of that sound became the music that came in afterward. Things like that. So you can be very creative with it. Enjoy it very much. My mom was an actor, so I have a deep appreciation of the theatrical arts and actors and film and stuff like that.
So, no kidding.
Yeah.
She was an actor as well?
My mom was a really good actor.
And
she specialized in Tennessee Williams live plays. She was a theater.
Wow.
So she's really good.
Very nice.
Great voice. Her voice was incredible.
Oh, wow. That is so cool. And so as you're doing all of these different projects, was it from like the first big one that you were putting together? That's when you felt like, ooh, I got something going here.
Sure. You know, it's a very natural, organic process. Yeah. You're not thinking about the results so much. You're just doing it because that's what you do. And then you put it out there and see what happens. And then that can govern what comes next. Like a line of work has its own growth and its branches like a tree, like chamber concertos or theatrical pieces or the stories. They have their own branches and they're all growing together. And that's why I'm really excited about my upcoming podcast, The Fantastic Worlds of Christopher Kaufman. It's a little pretentious, but I have fun with that. Just fun storyteller. And in that, the first part is going to be ongoing episodes.
Yeah.
Of Tales of the Ocean City for 10 minutes a pop. And eventually it's going to be like well over 100 episodes. But the second half of the podcast are interviews. I have a blog, The Power of Fantasy, it's called. And I write about fantasy, or I write about a writer, like a great fantasy writer like Lord Dunsany or Lloyd Alexander. And so I'll take those writings and I'll narrate them. Or change them, make them a little more poetic, and then put music to them. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what goes on in my upcoming podcast. And then I play at the end, I say, okay, I'm going to play the music from the episode you heard at the beginning, but without the narration. So just let your imagination roam free to the music. You can reimagine the episode's events, or just do whatever you want. Just listen. And the music is so... I love it. It's really good music. So people can just listen. I do it on myself, just hear the music, etc. And so this second half, though, I'll do interviews. It's going to grow and grow and grow. And I can do scenes from like the Fantastic Zoo, my theatrical projects. Like here's a scene from this, and invite people to check that out, etc. And I branch out eventually over 100 episodes. I can get to a huge swath of my work of various kinds, in addition to the Tales of the Ocean City episodes. So it's like putting it all together, all this work I've done all of these years, getting it all focused into one thing and sharing it with people. And again, I just want to get it out there, like give people. I talk about the transformative power of imagination, how important it is. Mm-hmm. There's one scene from the Fantastic Zoo with the dragon, and he's talking about the war on imagination. And so because we live today in the world is different than it used to be. There's a lot less imagination going on. There's so much that's given to you in videos and that. All you don't have to use your imagination to figure things out. But also, it's degraded. We live in a grayer world. A beautiful forest that brimming with life is now a parking lot. And so,
depressing. It can be very depressing.
And so, people, I think people are a little depressed by that. So, you can reawaken your inner self, the power of fantasy, the fantasy stories and the music and everything. So, I talk about that also in my upcoming blog, and just want to give people, and I say live with imagination, live here and see with imagination. And you can just do anything in your mind. You can awaken your life. You can awaken your dreams, something that you might have thought of years ago. You can still do that or do it in a different way or just sit there and enjoy thinking about it and feel much different about everything. So that's part of the whole idea of what I'm doing. So if I just want to give that and then see what happens, if it connects with people or not, we'll see. I hope so.
You have a tremendous back catalog too, it sounds like. So you have a lot to choose from. And you said that before you were just taking 10-minute snippets of each part.
Right.
So it's almost like if you're doing a weekly podcast, you have a full month's worth of content for this piece, and then a full month's worth for this piece, and so on. So it sounds like you have a really well structured breakdown of what it is that you're gonna do with this. So what I'm also curious about is, in regards to, you've already spoken about like collaborating with other filmmakers, but with a lot of the stuff that you're doing, it's just you. It's your ideas, it's your music, it's your inspiration, and it's putting it all out there. And one of the things that you're really putting so much focus on is your concerts. So like, when, what was that like after building up so much, getting that inspiration, getting the ideas, letting it flow, and now all of a sudden you get to present it in a concert hall? What was that experience like for you the first time you got to do that?
Well, that would go back to when I was at Cornell University finishing up my degrees. I started a concert series as a bridge. It was called Chiron Performing Arts. Nice. Based on the mythological figure Chiron, who Zeus put up into the stratosphere of Sagittarius after he died. And he was the teacher of the gods and the heroes, all this kind of fun stuff. Mm. So there I was doing the Chiron Performing Arts series. So I did that for many years.
Yeah.
And so for that, you compose. And of course, I had a different feeling for the mission for Chiron was to take the great music that we're doing in the ivory tower, but bringing it to the community. So I would do these concerts in very public places, community centers and things like that, and get my friends in there. And I also combined the different art forms. So we would have visual art and sculpture and dance all woven together into this performance system that I created. And so I did that for many years. Now, again, you build up an audience. The hard part is doing all this work, and then you don't have as much time to get people to show up. But there's a couple of times I did it in the same place and build up a nice audience, and I moved and started over somewhere else. And then, so that was ongoing. Then I started the other one, the Fantastic Theater, right? And that is really going well now. So every year, I've collaborated with, my daughter went to this middle school called Mark Twain, the Mark Twain Middle School, right? And they have a band, and she played in it. And I got to know the band director. He's a great guy, Jason Luft. And they have a really high quality band. And most of their players go on to LaGuardia Arts High Schools. They're all serious musicians.
Oh, nice.
Young musicians. Yeah. So now for my concert, I solved the problem of audience development by having the entire middle school band inhabit the stage throughout the whole concert on one side, and then do all these other stuffs in the beginning. And then all of their parents and guardians come, and then I have my own people. And then so the audience is full. It's virtually standing room only every year. And then I share with them my great creative artistic friends. For example, I've worked with the amazing and famous Quintet of the Americas. It's a woodwind quintet, which has been around for like 40 years now, and they're very successful.
Yeah.
And they commissioned me, and I did a piece with them, an environmental work with natural sounds and live performance and video called Hudson Valley Music. It's another subject. The players, they're beautiful, amazing, young, super hot New York genius players. So like this last time I had David Valbuena, and he's a clarinetist. And so he starts the show. He plays, he demonstrates, he talks about how he started music when he was young. And then he does a mini workshop with one of the players from the group, and they're really excited about it. And then a friend of a friend came. She used to play with the Boston Symphony and all this. She's an amazing violist. And she played music for my friend, Negro, who lives in Australia. Couldn't be there in person. But I made these films to go with it. And the pieces are based on natural things like the tarantula and penguins in the ocean and all this kind of stuff. And they loved that. So, and then we did my piece, Hudson Valley Music, with this amazing stand-up bass player who's my daughter's bass teacher, and my daughter playing electric guitar, and I doing words, readings from Jane Goodall and famous John Muir and all this stuff. And the visuals are really involved with natural images. And then the bass plays, and then we do this wild piece at the end where David comes on and he pretends to be like this wizard, and the whole thing comes alive with black lights, throwing things at the audience, the big beach balls that glow. So it's like a really, really fun concert. And so that has grown from the dust into a really successful thing that I do once a year, and it's a lot of fun. So that's just an example of what it's like to do those kind of things.
God, it just sounds like just an explosion of creativity that's going on in there. And it sounds like something that would be, I would say, like instantly contagious with everyone that's there. Like they were really excited just wanting to hear.
All the kids were like bubbling with excitement at the end of it. But
I hope it made them
want to
create.
Check it out. I'm sorry to interrupt. I apologize.
That's okay. I hope that people, that it made them want to create just as much.
Yes, makes them want to create. Yeah. Some of them come. One came dressed as Beetlejuice.
Nice.
He was the bassoon player. He's a really big guy. He's a really talented player. Anyway, so you can go and see. I have a highlight film of the event. So
It
does excerpts for the whole thing and talks about it. And it's really short and really fun. And that and others and a lot of stuff like that is on my YouTube channel, which is also called Sound Artists. Sound Artists on YouTube, and you can find you go to the playlist, The Fantastic Theater, and then you can see the highlight film from our concert and see all what I just talked about.
Oh, wow. That's got to be a blast. It's got to be a blast. And so with that, would, if anyone were to want to reach out to you and possibly collaborate with you, would they just reach out to you through your website?
Sure. I'm happy to give my email address. And that would be the one I use for professional purposes like this, so it's not lost in the mix, is Kaufman Tales. So it's Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, T-A-L-E-S, Kaufman Tales at soundartist.com.
And then again, Sound Art US.
Yes.
That's great.
So be sure to give it a good subject heading, like, maybe George's recent podcast, I want to collaborate on a film. Something real clear.
There you go.
That lets me know what's going on here so I can follow up, respond to you.
Yes, definitely tell him that Excelsior Journeys, the Road to Creativity, sent you.
Absolutely. I can send you to places where you can hear a lot of my different music. Because not everyone's going to want Howard Shore, Lord of the Rings. They're going to want different things.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of excerpts online that I can point them to. See,
oh, that's fantastic.
And they like.
Can you point out, like, say, like three different film scores that are out there that would just say, like, this was an inspiration, this was an inspiration, and this was an inspiration?
That's hard to do. I'm not connecting with that right now.
Mm-hmm.
a film score there's inspiration. Well, I mean, the greatest one I've ever heard is the one for The Lord of the Rings.
Howard Shore's.
So yeah. That's an inspiration for anyone who wants to think of doing film scores.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if my listeners were to look on social media, would they find you on just YouTube or would they find you elsewhere as well?
No, I have a page on Facebook, Tales of the Ocean City, Christopher Cotton, Tales of the Ocean City. And my Instagram is Kaufman Tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple others, Pinterest and the like, but I don't have time to read. I'm too busy creating stuff. I'm a real creation-focused person.
So, and that's awesome. And that's something that I truly feel like this is, Christopher is definitely the kind of person that we definitely want to hear from as much as possible. We want to get more from him because the work that he has been doing is so, just knowing everything that he's done, it just makes me want to like get in front of my keyboard and start and get back to writing and seeing what comes of it. Because, and it's something that the people really need to remember, just how contagiously inspiring music can be. And when you're hearing the right thing, it just makes everything just flow. So I hope that all of you are listening. Definitely check out Christopher's work and let him take you off to places that you never thought possible. Because when you hear that, then all of a sudden that opens up the possibilities for everything you are doing. And then you can go ahead and take that inspiration and that motivation and use that to create something special. And I hope that this opens things up to not only just inspiration and motivation, but also collaboration. I hope that all of you are just kind of reaching out to each other and seeing what you can do to amplify the ideas that you have and see what happens when they're pushed to the nth degree, because they definitely need to be now, because in these crazy times, we need your vision, we need your ideas, we need your stories now more than ever. So for Christopher Kaufman, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to george@heesgotit.com.